and welcome to another episode of G220 Radio. This is episode number 437. Long title here, Practical Principles on Preparing for Persecution. Now, this is a topic that came about when George and I had a conversation maybe a week or two ago. And
yeah, it's about a week, yeah.
Yeah, we started to talk about this topic and thought this would be a good conversation to discuss here on the program. And so, as you can see, George already chimed in. He's with us here for this program. He is with Things Above Us, the Roundtable, and he also writes for them. And he's done stuff with us here on G220 Radio as well. Always glad to have him back. And we have Mike Miller back from vacation. Glad to have him back with us as well. Although, when people see this, you'll already be back since this is pre-recorded. Just thought about it there a little late. But and Natty P. Yeah, for a week. So a lot to get into. So we're going to go ahead and jump right into this. You guys are already familiar with who we are. And so we're going to jump into this conversation. And the way that I wanted to start this is basically with the question, why this would be important. And then we can get into some of the details. But why would this be important? And George, this was a conversation you and I had. So I'm going to let you go ahead and explain why this would be something that churches may be or should be considering.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who doesn't see the current political climate of America right now and doesn't see the direction it's heading and doesn't see how the church is going to be the target if, you know, already subliminally has become the target, is either ignoring the facts or maybe they're just a little too naive to understand what's happening, right? So the idea behind what we're doing here is try to set the context. We do have an impending persecution, if not already so in some ways. We've had green persecution, as they called it, especially about 10 years ago when they passed the Supreme Court legalizing gay marriage. Perhaps maybe the politicians at the time thought that was going to be the nail in the coffin in the years to come. It probably didn't move as fast as they desired. But this one is moving at a rapid pace with COVID-19 on top of the Black Lives Matter, which is a very socialist, Marxist, anarchist type of movement with various theologies and sociopolitical agendas. This is the smorgasbord of what they've been looking for a while, and it's inevitable. And we need to be able to focus, do not despair, but prepare. Our hope is in Christ, right? We look to heaven for our hope, but that doesn't mean we ignore what's happening around us and doesn't mean we should not understand how to operate in a world or in an America, in a country, where it's no longer as free as it used to be. Just to set some other things in context, think about a church that lost its lease in Alabama for simply liking a pro-Trump activist that had something to say about Black Lives Matter. You can look it up online. You can see the news. That church lost its lease. It had been there for, you know, several years, and then it lost its lease simply because it liked a post. Mm. The other guilty by association, if you think about this, the officer that shot the man recently, I can't remember his name now for whatever reason. I had it in my head and I lost it. His stepmother was fired from her job. And the company released a statement regarding why they let her go. And of course, it's not going to say flat out it was because she was associated with the officer, but it's quite apparent and it's too close to the situation where it becomes very suspicious as to why they let her go. What would be the purpose other than the fact that you support equality, right? That's one of the things that they made sure that they put out there. So there is an implication there, an insinuation there. Guilty by association is going to be the tactic that is going to be used by the political agenda, right? If you're pro-Trump or you're against Black Lives Matter, or maybe your pastor said something along the lines of things that might sound white supremacist, however that's defined, is going to change. And they're going to cause you and your church, whether it's a brother who loses his job, or a pastor who says something, or a street preacher who stands up and speaks, or maybe you're outside and you're witnessing and you get caught up with another brother who is just happened to be preaching the gospel or just telling someone about Christ. Guilty by association is happening already. It's been happening for some time, but this time there's a stronger move with Black Lives Matter. So to think about this as being a possibility when it comes to persecution, we need to understand this is something that happens overseas. This is something that's been happening in communist China for a while. This is something that's happened in the Middle East, in African countries. We've read about it for years, and we've warned about it for years, and it's impending. So this is important for us to start thinking about, how do we operate in a hostile environment? How do we operate in a climate like this?
Yeah.
Mikey, you being ex-Air Force, Ricky, you being ex-Army, and of course, Natty, you said you're ex-Marine.
The extent of my ex-Marine is extremely limited.
That's fine. So
don't give people too much. Don't give me too much credit there.
No, too much credit. But the focus, the point I was trying to make was, people in the military understand something called operational security. Most civilians don't understand that. That idea of operational security is the mindset that we need to start operating with, right? As far as just baseline understanding of how our thinking needs to change, operational security would be that box that we put our mindset into. So I'll use some principles and things as the show goes on, but hopefully that context is set before I start moving into other aspects. I don't know if you guys had any questions or any thoughts behind
that. Well, one of the things that we had talked about previously in consideration for this conversation that we're having here tonight is the fact that it has been brought up that when persecution comes, it doesn't come as if they're coming for Christians specifically. As you've already mentioned, the guilty by association. There's always something that is the charge that's brought against people,
mm-hmm.
rather than just saying, yeah, we're coming after you because you're Christians and we hate Christ. And so this guilty by association, this is why we need to look at these things that are going on in the world. Again, not that we're necessarily trying to be, as we used this word the other day, a conspiracy theorist, but the reality is, this is what happens in China. This is what happens in other countries, you know, where they're coming after and persecuting Christians. Yes, they hate Christ. Yes, they hate the church, but they use other types of phraseology in why they're coming after them. And we can see that. You know, I think with the whole COVID thing, or actually before this, I think in a conversation we had once before, George, where we could have looked at things and said, you know, it's going to be this LGBT stuff that they're going to start nailing Christians with, because if you call homosexuality a sin, they're going to start shutting you down or saying it's hate speech. And then we get into the health crisis of COVID-19. If you try to stay open, or try to say, well, we're not going to shut down because we're Christians, now you're putting people's health at risk, and we're going to shut you down because of this. So it's always masked with something. Ultimately, that's the hatred for Christ and the hatred for the church of Christ, but it's masked with something.
Right. Yeah, it should. Go ahead, Nettie.
That's even true historically since Christianity's inception, right? They didn't call us Christians. We don't like the Christians. They labeled us as atheists and disloyal to the Roman Empire or emperor. So what do you call those? I don't know. I can't.
Traitors.
Traitors, anarchists.
They also called us cannibals because we ate our God. They call us incestual because we considered love for our brothers and sisters in Christ as something that we highly valued. So they misunderstood that. So
they also called us cannibals because they thought we put babies inside of bread to eat them. That was a popular myth in the Roman time. So, yeah, I think you can see throughout history this move against Christianity, even in the Holy Roman Empire, especially as you see it come closer to the Reformation with it. And then you have what happens in England, going back between Protestant royalty and Catholic royalty, and what happened in France and in Spain with the Spanish Inquisition. There's always these attempts to root out biblical Christianity that is true and faithful.
Absolutely. Yep. So hopefully that sets the stage. I think maybe, you know, we can just jump right in maybe to some first things that are first. I think, first of all, we need to establish, number one, a means of communication that isn't compromised. What that means is, before I go into this, a lot of the things that I'm going to say to you, not to you guys, the listeners, is going to sound strange to your ears because you just don't deal with this. We're Americans. We're so used to doing things so freely. So what I'm going to say is something that you should start now, developing these habits now. I'm already doing it. There's some other people I know who are already doing it. And develop some of these habits now so that when the time comes, when it gets super serious, then you're not going to be caught off guard. You're going to have something that is going to be established. And if you're listening to this, please share this with your pastors and your local congregational members. Develop something. I'm just putting out ideas for all of you, but develop something. First thing you have to develop is an uncompromised means of communication. That's tough in our technological age today, but some of the things you need to do is have a cryptic form of communication. And you can do that in different ways. If you're a port town where there's a lot of fishing, you can talk about fishing metaphors and use them as means of whether it's evangelism or meeting in a specific location. I would suggest whenever you are going to meet with another, whatever that location may be, well, first designate as a church, what would be that secure location that you guys would want to meet at? That is not normally your normal gathering right now, because you need a plan B, a place to be in case something goes bad. And you also need a plan C and D. And you need a way to be able to communicate how to get to B, C, and D, wherever those locations are. And using these means of communication and deciding where to be is important. Taking your cell phone with you to that location is not advised. If you are going to meet in these locations, it's either one, leave them in your car and then park the car in a location and you can walk to the location. Or buy a burner phone. Believe it or not, if you did a research online, burner phones aren't just left for drug dealers and sex traffickers. There are people who are professional who do use burner phones on a frequent basis. Some people who are using dating sites use burner phones frequently. They give out these numbers and their one-time use phone and they burn them. They're gone. But use a burner phone, buy one of their cheap, anywhere between $20 to $60, maybe a little bit more expensive, the flip phone more specifically, not the burner phones that are smartphones, and have that in your vehicle as a means of communication in case you get stuck on the side of the road or something happens, because you need cell phones. But put that in your vehicle as well and still walk to the secure location that you all have designated to walk so that you can meet together. When you've figured out that location, and you also have your phones put in your car, make sure things like tablets, laptops, whatever they may be. I know a lot of churches are doing Zoom, but unfortunately, those things also have listening devices. And you could be saying things within that meeting that could either give away your location or at least give away whatever it is you guys are planning to do in the next following week, whatever they may be. Once again, it sounds like it's paranoia, but it's not. It's just being very careful, right? We need to understand technology's role in our life, and we need to limit its participation in our life, okay? In regards to this area, when it comes to church services, church affairs, and where you meet, I'm not saying technology bad, never touch a phone ever again. It's not what I'm saying. Bring your cell phone to work, right? Do your job, scroll through Facebook like you normally would, but we're going to have to guard are assembling together, because that is the number one thing. If we can stop assembling together, we can stop strengthening each other, praying for each other, right? Hearing the word of God preached. That is the number one thing when it comes to the assembling of the saints. That's super important. We have to guard this particular context in our lives, not just for the security of our own lives, but also for the security of those that we're assembling with. Mikey, did you have something? I don't know if you're ready to say something. Okay.
Well, I was going to say, too, something we talked about the other day as well with this in having these places planned, right? You don't want to put that out to everybody that comes to your church services that aren't necessarily members. We're going to talk about members as well in this and the security of that. But but you don't want to give this out to people that may come to church. They may come every week. They may come every couple of weeks, but they're not committed to being members of the church. They just have no desire to really commit to it. You don't want to give that kind of information to them. Not because you don't love them, not because you don't care about them, but if they're not committed to being a part of that church and being a member and serving as a member in that church, Then again, for the safety of those other individuals in that church and your own safety and families, you want to make sure that that information is for those that are members who are dedicated to that body, because that could be an easy thing where people turn and flip.
Yep. And church membership is what solves that problem. Church discipline as well. We can talk about that later. We'll deal with communication for now, just so that we're not scattering all over the place, but establishing a means of communication that way, making sure you know your cell phone, where it's at, you know, putting it in certain places so that it doesn't give up your location, being able to come in a particular location, being aware, planning and coming together and have a think tank. Okay, we've done this for the first time this week. What are some observations when you guys got out of your car? Are there people looking at us? Does anybody have their Bible in their hand? Who has a tablet right now? Who forgot and brought their cell phone? These are things, that habits you're going to have to start doing now, right? So that when it comes time, you're already thinking along these lines and this direction, and establishing that form of communication is important. One way you can establish a alternate means of communication other than cell phones and Facebook and Twitter and all those other things are ham radios. Ham radios are very, very beneficial. You can get a license for, I think, $10 or $10 or $15. It depends on the state that you're in. The ham radio that I would recommend at this point in time, I had it up. I don't know why it's not here. Give me a second. It would be model numbers TM281A, as well as THK20A. Those are the two model numbers I would recommend. One goes in your vehicle. Another one is a handheld. And those are very, very good. Sometimes weather can be really bad, and it might limit your progress as to how far it goes. But those go fairly far, up to 20 miles on a good day. And you have to, like I said, get a license to use it. And you can use your form of communications that way if you don't want to use your cell phones or whatever. And you can still use your cryptic form of communication as well through the ham radios. And if you have repeaters in the area, there are online websites that have something called repeaters or towers that will take your signal and they will send them further, so that if you need to communicate even further than where you're at, that is a possibility. Another way you can communicate using cryptic communication, other than just, you know, having metaphors or things that you would say that seems like normal everyday speech, is something called an Attendorf cipher. If anybody has ever heard of it, if you've ever watched National Treasure, that's where they use the chants or silent letters to decode what was back on the back of the Declaration of Independence. But that cipher has been used during war eras for several decades. And the reason why it's so hard to crack is because you can take a code like this. I don't know if the numbers are going to be backwards when they show it. But every three numbers is a code or a signification in a book. So let's say, for instance, you have this first code, these first three, 161. The first number is the line inside a book. So if you guys can agree on a book that you would use, okay, it doesn't have to be an elaborate book. It could just be anything that everybody has on their shelf. Everybody beforehand always agrees on a page number. So let's say it's page 20 of your favorite book. When you send out that code, whether it's through text or ham radio, and you say 161, the first number is the line on that page, the first line. If it was two, the first number, it would be the second line, and so on and so forth. The second number, six, would be the sixth word in that line. And then the third number would be the third, or the number of the letter in that word of that line. So it's kind of hard to explain right now, but if you had a book in front of you, you can look at those numbers and you can look online to see how to use an Attendorf cipher. And you can communicate that way using these codes if you need to for emergency purposes, for sending help. Maybe you need to send an elaborate code for other reasons. Maybe the meeting, you want to change the meeting, or you want to change the page that you're going to be on for next week, whatever. And the Attendorf cipher is very versatile. You can use it for all kinds of different reasons. You can use the numbers to signify different things in the book. Using hymnals, Bibles, whatever it is, but it has to be the exact same book, same copy, same year it was printed. Everything has to be the exact same. And it takes a NASA computer to crack. So not everybody is built with a NASA computer in their mind. So if you have a not endorsed cipher, the only way to crack that code is by being in that community in which you're in, to know what page you are literally on. Mm-hmm. And it has to be a printed book or something that you know that is going to be used within that community. Don't make it so obvious that it stands out on your bookshelf or in your house, but don't make it so inobvious as well. It's just got to be something that's common. Normally churches do Bible studies together. They usually buy books, same books, right? You can use any one of those. You can also use the same Bibles as long as you have the same kind. You could also use your hymnals. It just depends. But use the Ottendorf cipher to your advantage because it's a very cryptic way of communicating. And once again, unless they know exactly what page you're on, it is very difficult to crack.
Can you spell Ottendorf for our listeners, George?
Say again?
Can you spell Ottendorf for our listeners?
I believe it's O-T-T-E-N-D-O-R-F, Ottendorf. And, you know, it's funny, you're going to hear this. Once again, I have to reiterate this, even though we've already recently gone through this with some of the brothers that I know and some of the other brothers that are actually using this. It sounds strange at first. Why do I have to do this? Well, once again, once the situation occurs, there's no time for planning. You can't just sit here and wait and allow this to continue and not think, well, how am I going to continue to communicate with my church? How am I going to get people on board? Which is another question we're going to talk about, hopefully. So we have to have something in which people can agree on as an established means of communication in case something goes wrong, right? And that is one of the best ways to do that, using these mediums. Don't plan your next church visit on Facebook. If you're going to go evangelize and be bold for Christ, absolutely 100%. But stop putting these events online. They're compromised communications. Stop talking about your next, you know, church picnic using Twitter. Emails, you know, we use emails for various reasons. I understand that, but we got to be able to use these alternate means of communication because unfortunately every single one of these mediums are compromised. Once again, not saying that these can't be used, but when it comes to this particular context of meeting, we have to understand this has to be sacred now. This has to be a way in which we guard this. So when it does happen, we know where to go, what to do. This isn't nothing new. We've talked about it. We've drilled over it, right? We do this with our children. When we lose them in a crowd, what do we ask them to do? Meet at X location or stay there until I come get you. You have a plan B. You don't want your kid just being snatched up by anybody. So that's security of your family. Why not security for your church? It's the same thing. You're just planning ahead so that when it does happen, if you've drilled over and over again, whether it's a fire escape, or whether somebody's trying to kidnap you, doesn't matter. Plan ahead, use OPSEC. These are ways in which you can do that using different means of communication. There are other sophisticated ways of being able to meet as well. In locations where you don't have your cell phones, you can find those locations. You can also discuss them in different ways. You can also leave notes in certain locations where everybody agrees on. You can do that. And at any time that certain location is compromised, you let people know that the locations are compromised, we can no longer meet there, those kinds of things. So there's different ways to go about this. There's plenty of deep references and things online that you can search. Before we move on to church membership and moving into that area, did you have any questions about communications?
No, I think this is a crucial aspect, a crucial first step. The army or the force on a battlefield that communicates more effectively wins the day. Mm-hmm. Also, we see this a biblical principle. For if the bugle produces an indistinct sounds, who will prepare himself for battle? In those days, the early church, you know, during the earlier part of this the AD. And even before the bugle call, even up until the 1800s, mm-hmm. Was a way of signaling troops, and they didn't wait until the battle started to agree upon which call would wheel right or which one was a flanking maneuver. They would drill these and practice them until you hear the call in your sleep and you wake up and you know what to do.
Yep, that's a good example. You have old school fire signals as well. Right. Whistling calls. I mean, this is just stuff that we've read about, but now we have to learn how to just have these habits built into our everyday life, right? And if you at home are going to talk about church things between you and your wife and your family, take your cell phone, put it in another room, close the door. It's just the way it's going to have to be. Once again, I'm not saying technology bad. You just have to limit its participation in your life. Realize what it actually does with the whole COVID-19 and the contact tracing and all the things that are going to be implemented in the future. It's going to be very easy to keep track of where you're going. In communist China right now, they have a system, literally, it's called Skynet. I posted it on my Facebook. Really creepy stuff. They're not ashamed of what they're doing. They can go back a week and see people's face and know where they've been and what they've done. It's a serious tracking system. When it gets to that point, there's really nothing you can do. Whether or not we have that kind of a system in America is really up for debate. But at least at this point, there's something we can do, hopefully, to meet. And if communist China can have an underground church where they still meet and they're blowing up and are being successful, you know, you have to know that they're using other means of communication to protect themselves, as well as to proclaim the gospel boldly so that they can, you know, glorify God on the earth. That's just the way it is. So it's not so secretive where nobody can come and nobody can do anything and that nobody can know we're part of our secret club, right? We're not Gnostics, right? Yeah. We're not the ones that have secret knowledge. We have a message to share, but we have to admit that we have to prepare how to meet this way. And there are some brothers in Canada whom I found out, like I said, today, who said that they're flying under the radar right now because of the strict guidelines that they have over there of COVID-19. And they just can't not meet together. They're brethren. So it's already happening in Canada. Yeah. The next thing when you talk about, you know, sometimes what we're used to is just our certain behaviors. So like I was telling him earlier with church discipline and membership, there are things that we're used to in America, like inviting people to church. And we're used to that because we're free to worship. But what we need to understand is that when it comes to these kinds of locations in the future, if there are people in our church, well, first of all, if your church doesn't practice church membership, your church is going to be the first ones that are going to be open to a problem, something like this, where they're going to come in, and you're going to have people who aren't dedicated, who aren't Christians, or who haven't been evaluated, whose life does not exemplify the things of Christ. So when you start doing stuff like this, they're either the first ones going to criticize, they're going to first ones to be pushed back, or when it comes time for persecution, they're going to be the first ones to walk away or give yourselves up. Now, granted, you can't control whenever somebody betrays you. Somebody can have the trappings and fruits of being a Christian, still be betrayed and still betray each other like Judas, right? But you can't control those. And don't let those people out there that are naysayers say, well, there's always going to be that and you're always going to have that. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean we still can't prepare. And it's those people that respond that way are the ones you need to worry about, because they'll be the first ones, once again, to drop a dime on you. I hate to be so specific, but those are the people that are going to tell on you, because they're going to say, well, there's nothing for us to hide, right? We're supposed to be bold, aren't we? Or my life isn't that interesting, so there's no reason for me to act this way. Give those kinds of people grace in the beginning, but if you see that the behaviors and the things that you're trying to implement in your church so that you can protect the body, so that you can still meet together, even when there is going to be these unjust restrictions on the church, let those people know that they don't have to participate. And once those people are out, then change the location, change the code, change the way you do things, and once again, make it secure all over again. These are things that the military does. Whenever a certain person leaves a certain work center where there's high security, they change the code. They don't want anybody having access to everything that they do. So we as a church need to understand the balance between inviting somebody to church and knowing that in times of persecution, we need to be evangelizing people that are lost. If somebody wants to come to our church, we just say, hey, I'm glad you're interested. So tell me a little bit about why you're interested in coming to church. Do you know Christ? Let's talk about it. Let's have several lunches together. Let's have more than just several lunches together. Let's talk about what it is to be a believer. Let's see if they're really serious about coming to Christ before just bringing them into your fellowship. Right. We don't do that in America, but churches overseas do, because they have to protect not only the flock, but they want to be bold for Christ. So they're going to witness to somebody sometimes for weeks and months before they introduce them to the local congregation.
You know,
and
as
that's
you was,
just the way it is.
Yeah, as you was bringing up the fact of changing codes and changing passwords, even at my job, I won't say what it is, but at my job, when somebody gets fired, we change the password, the code to get into the building, because sometimes you get disgruntled employees who are mad, upset that they were fired, and they come back and take it out. I mean, there's these examples have happened in the job field that I work at, and so therefore they change the code every time somebody gets fired.
Yep. Part of the thing that we haven't discussed yet is one of the things that we have to do along with church membership and communication is infrastructure. So you have to have cell groups in place. So you have communication, church membership, and church discipline, as well as cell groups. And cell groups, what you do is with your church is you have to divide your church into smaller groups. With this comes a lot of other complex ideas with ecclesiology and church membership. This is all going to be, you know, kind of lumped in. So I'm trying to be somewhat general and somewhat specific with the time that I have. But if your church hasn't already decided with these plans on how to be able to divide your church into smaller groups where there is going to be a leader that can be a trusted person within that group. So if something happens, there's a means of communication between cell groups as well as the leaders. Your church is doing, your leaders are doing your church a disservice. I'm telling you that right now. They need to be divided into smaller groups. So if something happens, the whole church isn't compromised or the whole church doesn't fall for whatever reason, you guys can, you know, spread out or move in different locations. And you have leaders within those groups that know what to do if, for whatever reason, cell group one comes under fire or finds out that you can't meet anymore because the government decided to say you can't come in or you can't meet because you're breaking guidelines or whatever the case may be. And now you have to move locations. And if they find out that cell groups two and three are also in these other locations, then guess what? You're going to have to tell them, hey, this location has been compromised and you are too. Figure out what you're going to do because they know that we're meeting. And that's what you're going to have to do. Some people may disagree with this. Like Mike said before we got on the show off the air, there might be some give and take as to how the church is going to handle this. That's perfectly fine. Everything I'm saying is not a dictatorship, or nor is it the end all be all. These are just principles, things that you should start thinking about so that you can make your church more versatile. The problem, the reason why this sounds foreign to so many of us, like the book, The Trellis and the Vine. I don't know if anybody's ever read this book, but it's a really, really good book. You're choosing leaders and you're choosing members within the organization to be leaders, and you're always raising up another generation of leaders in your church. And the idea is so that they can be evangelists in other areas. And you're going to take pieces, people within that church, and you're going to move them in that other area where there's a need. If we had that mindset already, cell groups wouldn't be that uncommon, because you already have your church divided into smaller groups, ready to do something for the kingdom that is just beyond what you would hope in a one congregation church, right? Most people treat churches like professional career development. You know, you're just mentoring people and they come in, there's a club. It's more like a wine club where they come in and you know, drink their favorite wine and talk about their favorite book, which is the Bible. And that's it. They go home and then they go about their business, you know, and doing things that they normally do without the church. But biblical church is coming together, sharing all things in common, sharing our lives, depending on each other for our lives. If someone loses a job in one cell group or another or in a church, having contact to know, hey, brother Natty Pete just lost his job and he doesn't know if he's going to have a job in the next 6 months. Who's got a place that he can stay at, or who's got money left over to help him buy some food? Are we talking about that? What about the widows and the orphans in the church, if you have any? Are we talking about how to help them? What if your elder, your paid staff, gets in trouble because he's preaching against the spirit of the age, the zeitgeist of the age? Do we have a plan in place to take care of him or her? Not pastors, but anybody who's ministering, like a deacon, a female deacon. These are people that are paid staff, right? That you would want to help. What are we doing? Do we have something in place? Do we have a discussion in place? Do we know how we're going to get money to and from one location or the other? Are we going to use the mail system? Is wiring money the safest? It may not be, depending on the occasion. But these are just things that you have to think about within the church membership, church discipline, cell groups, and meetings. And having the ham radio, having that Ottendorf cipher, having some, maybe even some pre-planned words and choice words to use that are quick and to the point, that let other groups know, whether they're sitting in their house and they're just watching TV or they're at work, they'll let them know instantly, something just went wrong. We need to change the way we do things. Or we need to have a meeting at XYZ location at this time today so that we can discuss what we're going to do, right? Stuff like that.
I think, once again,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I think you know, you're saying a lot, but I think the one thing that, you know, we had already talked about previously, I think that concerns me the most about this kind of thinking of how can you help or provide financial help to a pastor or to another member in the church, somebody who may get arrested because they were sharing the gospel with somebody, or somebody found out they was a Christian and that the husband gets arrested and he's got a family with kids, a wife and kids. And I'm not going to say that there are not churches that don't do well to take care of their members when something happens. When somebody gets sick, you know, there's churches that bring food throughout the week or for as long as that person's down to help that wife or, you know, the rest of their family have food. But this is the thing that concerns me. There's a lot of churches, I don't think that would faithfully or continuously...
Consistently
help the widows and orphans. I think they may start off with that intention, but then, as we were talking about the other day, that it becomes then a financial burden if you're trying to take care of your family and then taking care of another family in the church. You know, even if you're just pitching in some, it can start to weigh on you. And I think, as we talked about the other day, these are things we need to consider now to start planning and preparing and putting things away. We put a lot of money into programs in churches. They put a lot of money into the buildings in churches. You know, are we putting stuff away to say, hey, what happens if our pastor gets arrested for preaching? Mm-hmm. How are we going to support his family? Or what happens if another member of the church gets arrested or even put to death for preaching the gospel? Are we going to be able to consistently provide for their family? Because if you've got a mother who's raising 4, 5, 6 kids, homeschooling them, unable to go and get a job because she's got little ones that she's trying to raise, and you don't want to put them into the system of the world, you want to send them to Rome to be taught and instructed in growing up, it's going to be very difficult for that person to provide for themselves. So are we planning and preparing even our own personal individual finances to prepare for these things when we may have to help another family in the church?
Yeah. And part of that is knowing your resources, knowing who in the church may have an extra room, knowing who in the church who's willing to at some point be able to say, whether it's among your lay leaders, your elders, the people that help you teach, right? Look for your leaders in the church, start grooming them and to help them understand you play an important role in this kind of environment because you might make more money than somebody else. You might be more financially well off. The other individual is not. So what can we do to help accommodate the person who is not? What can we do to help them if they lose their job? How about what do we do if the person who is the wealthiest person in the church loses their job? Then what? Well, that affects the pastor too. Right? I don't think we realize how interconnected we really are. We got to think about how to be able to take care of our pastors and our leaders because they minister in the word. And if they need to take their family of 6 to my house for the next several months until we can figure out what we can do, so be it. If that's going to be the plan moving forward, that's going to be the plan moving forward. If that plan gets compromised, we figure out something else or we have a plan B and C. But these are the things that we need to sit down and talk about. We really need to have a serious conversation. And part of it is starting with the family, sitting down at the dinner table, talking to your kids, talking to your wife, just, hey, honey, if we get persecuted, what do you think you would do? What are the things that you would think about as you're thinking, we can't come together and worship anymore? How do you feel about using cryptic communication? Does that make you feel uncomfortable? How does it make you feel knowing that you might not have the freedom to carry your Bible in your arm just for the sake of being able to go to a specific location so people don't out you as knowing that you're about to come together to worship? How do you feel about not singing out loud and just singing in a low voice like many people in other countries do? They don't sing out loud. They sing very low because they don't want to get caught. But they sing and they preach and they talk. Sermons are happening in whispers. Right now, we're not experiencing that sort of extreme. But if we just start developing some habits, right now, while we still have the freedom to do so, when that happens, we've already been thinking along these lines, right? The train has already been on that track. We were just waiting for the stop, right? We've already been waiting for the dramatic stop to say, now is the time to do these things. So while we're thinking about these things and we think this is foreign to us, it should be, because none of us are used to this. All of us here are not used to this. None of us, right? But it doesn't mean we shouldn't think about our behaviors, what things we do that can in some ways jeopardize our local assembly, what things that we normally would do in our worship services that would have to change, some ways in which we communicate, once again, some ways in which we do church discipline versus church membership, finances, once again, and security. We have to think about security, right? Thinking about those who are not financially stable, thinking about those within the congregation, but also security. How do we do security? Are we going to have anybody that stands watch in case somebody just wants to be an active shooter? Who knows? Are we doing that now? Because there are active shooters that are random. So we should be hopefully having that in our church, at least thinking about that. But what do we do if someone decides to, on the outside or just standing out there looking suspicious and looking in the direction of where we're having to be in a building or someone's house or whatever the case may be? Are we paying attention to those things? Do we have a means of being able to, once again, change the location using secure means of communication so that we can communicate to everybody else, hey, the security of the church has been compromised? So we have to think along those lines too, looking at indicators of that other people look for when it comes to gatherings of large people. Because I'm telling you right now, with the whole COVID thing, it's not going to get any better. The second, third, fourth, fifth wave, whatever you want to call it, it's going to continually happen. And what's happening in the news is this. You can decide whether you want to wear face masks, whether you want to social distance, what have you. But the world isn't going to see it that way. And the world may use this opportunity as a weapon to be able to stop certain believers from gathering, even if you did everything right. And we saw on the news that people were doing everything right and cops were still coming to churches, finding people in their own car, listening to an FM radio. If that doesn't give you the first indication of what could possibly happen, you have your head in the sand. You're not thinking. And if, heaven forbid, you're an elder and you don't think that could happen to your church or in America, because if you are, you really need to rethink your eldership and how you protect your flock. Sorry if I sound very passionate about this, but we've been ignoring this for too long. Many people in the churches have been ignoring this for too long. We have a naive hope. Now, granted, God can revive it. God can save America. God can even stall it by putting a particular leader in place which will protect our freedoms for another 4 years. But then what? It's going to come to an end sooner or later. And I'm not a doomsday prepper, and I'm definitely not somebody who's just going to say, heaven forbid you ever use technology. But we need to understand this is going to come to an end, and whenever it does, we should be ready. We should be ready to continue to pass the baton to other leaders within our church. We should be ready to protect the members of our church. We should also be ready to evangelize boldly if the Lord calls upon us to do so. And what that means is if we ever get caught or something happens and we have to be able to testify before the world why we do the things we do, we have to have what? The answer for the hope that lies within us. What people don't understand, and I've been saying this for years, is that 1 Peter, when it talks about giving an answer for the hope that lies within you, it's in the context of persecution. It's in the context of standing before people who are trying to shame you for being a believer. That's in that context. We don't know that context. We just look at it as a debate and defending the authenticity or the inspiration of scripture or maybe the deity of Christ. And that might fall into that category, but the strict category that Peter's dealing with in most of 1 Peter is dealing with how to be faithful in the midst of persecution.
You know, what comes to mind is the idea that, as you was talking about some things, we teach our children what the Bible teaches. You know, we try to raise them in the fear and admonition of the Lord, what the Bible says about honoring your parents, what the Bible says about lying and stealing. We train our children to know what God's word says. And we also know that God's word says, you will receive persecution for my name's sake. Now, even if in our context of America, say we don't get to this point in the next 20, 30 years, right? Say we don't get there. Shouldn't we, though, as Christians, still be preparing our children and say, look, as a Christian, you will face persecution. Mm-hmm. So prepare for it. get the mindset that it's going to be there. We've said this before. Those of us who've gone out and do evangelism on the streets, this isn't a like you're some different kind of level of Christian.
But yeah, this isn't new to us either.
Yeah, but when you're on the streets and you're sharing the gospel with people in one-on-one or open-air preaching, and you're consistently trying to get out there and share, you've seen some of these things already taking place in our country. You've seen mm-hmm. people getting arrested or getting told to leave public property because they're not wanted. I just seen a video the other day with the Black Lives Matter protest where the police told this brother he couldn't be there because the protesters didn't want to hear what he had to say. Mm-hmm. This is public property. So these things are taking place and happening slowly, but maybe faster
it's
than
more
we
accelerated
think.
Within yeah, the last couple months.
Yeah, faster than we think, but slowly compared to what's been going on in Europe, you know, where if you reopen the Bible and read against homosexuality, they come and arrest you. You know, so these things have been happening, but we need to be preparing, like you said, training our children and teaching them, hey, as a Christian, if you are putting your faith in Jesus Christ and you are standing bold in your faith, you will face persecution. And Lord willing, you don't face any type of persecution like we see in the Middle East or in China, but there's no control over that. Yep. You know, we have no control over that. The country's going to go the way that the country goes, and God ultimately is control of this. And we do see through persecution, through the blood of the martyrs, the church grows. So, I mean, that should just be something I'm just thinking at, you know, something that we don't really often even think about teaching our children about.
Our churches that are going to bow to the Black Lives Matter movement, that are going to, at every whim of government edict, bow to every guideline that it ever says, right? I'm not trying to make fun of the churches that are still closed because of COVID. That's a little bit more of a gray. I can understand some of them, although I disagree with many of them that are still closed at this point. I'm not going to try to get at them, but at some point they're going to have to decide when's enough is enough at right. some point, right? Because you cannot continue to not gather together in the assembling of the saints or just using Facebook or Zoom as if that is the way God designed the church. That is not the way God designed the church to gather, period. But when we get to this point, at some point, we're going to have to say to ourselves, look, we've been preparing for this, is what the direction we're going to move, accelerated or not. This is where we're going. We need to do something. We need to talk about this. This needs to be part of our lives. But the reason why some of these churches will never face this is because, number one, they don't even preach the gospel. Let's just be flat out honest. The people that are compromising with Black Lives Matter as an organization, not talking about skin color and the injustices and having those complex issues that we are all talking about, where some people who are genuine believers can be on one side or the other. I'm not talking about that. We're talking about strict supporters of Black Lives Matter who are either naively or maybe even knowingly supporting this organization as a church. They're enemies of the gospel. They won't face persecution. They'll be targeted and maybe even still shut down despite their support, right? They'll get eaten by the own monster that they fed, but many of them won't. The bigger ones won't because it attracts too much attention. But all the other churches that are trying to be faithful, the smaller churches, the ones that aren't going to make the news, the ones that are going to suffer, probably mostly silently, without nobody having any sympathy. They need a plan. We all need a plan, but they're going to be persecuted because they're preaching the gospel faithfully. And those that live godly will suffer persecution. And that includes preaching the gospel. When you preach the gospel, you'll be persecuted. Godly living was never outside of the sphere of preaching. Those in the congregations that are smaller, whether big or not, those that are faithfully preaching the gospel will be targets. So, knowing things like that, if we know the kind of gospel we preach, and all four of us know the kind of gospel we preach, we need to be thinking about it. We will be targets. We're not trying to be martyrs, right? We're going to be faithful. We're going to be compassionate. We're not going to go out and be nut jobs and just screaming at the top of our lungs, you know, despairing and declaring. No, we're going to despair and prepare. But at the same time, we're not going to be dumb. We're going to know that one day we might have to be called to the carpet to maybe give our lives for Christ, or maybe even suffer to where we're going to suffer dishonorably. We're going to be accused of being racist and bigots. We may not go to prison, but we'll just lose our jobs. Does your church have a plan to fall back on? are your elders talking about these things? Because if they're not, you should be super concerned if you're a faithful believer in your congregation right now. And I, once again, I pray that my passion isn't misunderstood. I'm not railing against any particular church, but man, are we just ignoring the obvious. We're ignoring the obvious. So my admonition, even though we're reaching the hour mark with some of those principles, would be just ask, just a quick question to anybody. How do you feel about gathering if, for whatever reason, the government told you not to? How would you feel? Would that be against your conscience? If they say, yes, it would be, say, okay, thank you for telling me. No worries, brother. I'll be praying for you. If you're ever interested in gathering, let me know. I'd love to gather with you or anybody else, right? You don't have to be rude. Just ask. Figure out who in your congregation are willing to gather despite the unjust guidelines of the law or whatever the case may be. Then find people in your church who are probably military, who have that OPSEC mindset, because you're going to be talking about stuff that's not foreign to them. They understand this. And anybody who has any kind of government job, or maybe even an environment where they're familiar with security, right? They got to know these things. See if they're comfortable with it. Start working with them. Start building the infrastructure right now. Have it in place so that if something does happen, the people that felt uncomfortable may change their mind. And then you can say, welcome. We've been waiting for you. We know why you felt uncomfortable. We understood why you felt uncomfortable, but we have this in place. We're ready to take care of you as brothers and sisters in Christ. And Lord willing, they're brother and sister. And Lord willing, there won't be any betrayal. Obviously, that we can't control that. But mm-hmm. we have to do what we can with what we've been given, with the freedoms that we have now, while we still have them. Because when it comes down to the wire, it's going to be almost too late to operate. Doesn't mean that the Church of Christ will die, right? The gates of hell will never prevail over against the Church of Christ. But once again, we have to be wise as a serpent, harmless as doves. We don't have to be naive. We just got to be forward thinking about what's going to happen in the future and preparing the next generation to pass the baton of the gospel should the Lord tarry.
So I think one thing to add to this, you haven't really mentioned it, but needs to be also addressed, is the 501c nonprofit status churches go after.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
This is something that I've kind of looked into a little bit in the last year or so. I went to a conference in Indiana. It was hosted by a Reformed Baptist church that is a free church, a church that is not incorporated as a 501c3. Mm-hmm. And there is going to a point that with all of this, and if we're trying to prepare, we must consider going to a free church form outside of the government with it. And as of right now, because of the First Amendment, churches don't have to be a 501c3. Mm-hmm. Mm. They can receive tax benefits that 501c3 does. What they lose is grants to build buildings. Mm-hmm. That becomes important, because if this all goes south and we're preparing, what about these churches who have used grants for government subsidies to build a church? Mm-hmm. What stops the church or the state from saying, that's our building, get out?
Yep. Another thing too is, if you're being supported by a church that's 501c3, right? And let's say you're a missionary church or a satellite church or a plant. Does your church, as a plant, satellite church, missionary, whatever you are, do you have a plan in place that you don't have to be dependent upon that church? That you can have a local independent body that is self-sustaining, autonomous, that's able to govern itself? Do you have that kind of thing? Because if not, start thinking about it. Because like Mikey said, when the dookie hits the fan, it's not going to be pretty. You're going to be caught, and then you're going to be wondering what's going on. If that's something you're willing to suffer for, once again, every man has to stand before the Lord and give an account for everything that they do, right? If that's something you're willing to suffer for, Godspeed to you, right? But I have a little bit more of a leadership mindset that when it comes to the church. Maybe it's just the military inside of me, but I've been groomed to think about others before myself, which is another reason why I think about heresies and false teachings and all kinds of other things, because I'm a preacher of the gospel and I care about other people. I care about their souls. I care about who they are. I care about their physical being, spiritual well-being, mental well-being, whatever category you want to divide them up into, I care about all of it. So for me, I think about these things probably a lot more than the average person does. But I'm calling upon anybody who's listening, please, if you're a leader within the church, start thinking about these things for the sake of others. Please. I can't stress to you enough, this is not some kind of crazy conspiracy theory. This is just going to happen. You think about churches that are getting bailouts right now from the government because of the whole COVID shutdown. You think that the government is not going to want some kind of reparations? You can't just take government money and not expect to follow their rules and guidelines. Mm-hmm. And when the rules and guidelines change, that First Amendment ain't going to protect you for very long. It's not even protecting some of the churches even now. The government has overstepped their boundaries in so many different directions when it comes to the First Amendment. It's crazy. They're not even talking about it in the news. It's like that's the last thing they even bring up. So we need to understand how important this is, that while we can appeal to the First Amendment, that may not be the case coming up in the very near future. We need to appeal the word of God. What has God commanded us to do? How do we be faithful? How do we balance not being rogues, right? Obeying our government, but realizing where that line is in our church, where we realize we're not just trying to disobey the government. It's not our first thought in our mind. We just want to obey God. We love him. We worship him. I love the saints that I'm with. I love them and I'll do anything for them. I'll lay down my life for the sheep. You think when the Bible talks about when you fed and did the things to the least of these, you did it to me? You risked your life visiting another believer in prison.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's right.
That's what those verses are talking about. Guilty by association. You went to help another believer. You said that my love for them is greater than my life. That's what that verse is talking about. And then visiting those who are in prison, like Hebrews talks about, same exact thing. Mm-hmm. That's the context, right?
Right.
Hopefully it never comes to that, but I'm sorry. You can call me a defeatist all you want. I have a very glorious view of the gospel. Trust me. I know the gospel will always win despite what persecution comes, but I'm not naive. I don't have very much faith in human nature, let alone human nature in big government. I've seen it. And we've all seen it. We've read about it, how nations rise and fall, and what happens to the believers in those nations when it does. So,
and one thing to add, if you hold to a theology that teaches that you don't have to worry about the tribulation or persecution because you're going to be taken out of here before that time comes, you might want to adjust your theology.
Yep. The Bible never teaches anything like that. We're always going to suffer tribulation and persecution. And then the Lord returns as he sees fit.
Something that I want to sprinkle on top of all of this. I was reading Cyprian a little bit earlier this year, and there was some reference to martyrdom in the high call that the early church placed on martyrdom, almost in, if you didn't know any better from our lens, you'd think that they were all hungry to go die. But it does come to that. And something that I often think about in my own desire to be the kind of person to be qualified to have my life taken from me for the sake of Christ someday. If that was ever not a hypothetical, something that I often think about is places where Jesus says things like, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, pick up his cross daily and come after me. And all the times in the Bible it says die to self. That's where all this starts, with a bold faith that's bold enough to mortify our own sin, to subjugate our own desires, and do just what you said, George, and put others first. The only way to do that is through a glorious view of the gospel in being enraptured with Christ, but also loving him and having such a view of his holiness that we would die to our own desires and our own self. And if we don't do that on a daily basis now, we're not ready to, if we're not ready to live for Christ, we'll never be able to die for Christ. And many will pinch the incense as it were. And hopefully they return. But the whole martyrdom, the whole being able to stand up to persecution, that starts every day in our daily prayers. So yep. I just wanted to sprinkle that all on top as key preparation for such a time.
And there's much more that can be discussed about it. Like, this is just starting the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as George says, about how we need to consider technology. I had someone come to my door, it's been several years, trying to sell me a video camera doorbell. Tells me it's encrypted by military standards. And I looked at him and
Mikey, you know, when we hear military standards, it scares us. It's not a good thing.
I said to him, I was like, look, even military computers get hacked.
Mm.
I don't care if the signal's encrypted to whatever bit it may be. Computers are hacked. We think about that. The U.S. nuclear armament isn't digitized because it can't be hacked.
It's analog.
It's all analog,
mm-hmm.
which means you have to be in there to do it.
Yep, I was a part of it.
And so there is, I mean, just think about what the government has to do to protect itself from its enemies. It's, and the technology it's going to use against its enemies, it can easily turn around and use it against its citizens. Mm-hmm. That's why the Snowden incident with the NSA is important. That is why you have Rand Paul putting up roadblocks to try to protect American citizens. That's going to end eventually. Mm. There's no doubt about it. If you have read 1984, America's moving that way. And we see the example across the Pacific Ocean and the largest country in the world, as you mentioned. This is just the start. And it's going to impact everything. It's going to impact how we report our taxes. It's going to impact how we use our money, as you mentioned.
How we travel.
And, you know, there's wisdom to look forward and to see what's happening and prepare and not be, as George is saying, doomsday. And just to understand that this is how our government is acting. Mm-hmm. This is what it does itself. And we should think about the same thing. Mm-hmm. Just even traveling to common locations. George, and you probably told, I was told in when I was in England, don't take the same routes to work. Mm-hmm. Change it up. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be predictable.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things are going to have to start do it. And this is stuff I still do today.
Yeah.
I'll change my route up every once in a while. Make it different. Leave at different times, try to do something different. I don't do it as much as I used to. But these are things. And not because I'm paranoid. A lot of it's training and just thinking about that. Mm-hmm. But when I have riots happening 2 miles down the road from my house, I mean, I have to start thinking about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And to do it. And so,
finish your thought.
So just realizing, may this sounds weird. Maybe you're thinking, well, no, we still have time. And that may be the case. But there's nothing wrong about thinking through these things and going through it. Thinking about, okay, how should I, should we go with this? How would we go this? And to think more deeply, which all the tech companies are doing already.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said something there, Mike, that, you know, you do some of the same things you did before, you know, just, it's just kind of, it's already ingrained in you, right?
Yeah.
In the military, we constantly would train to have a mental memory of how to respond to something. Because I've said this so many times to people, you don't know how you're going to respond in a situation until it hits the fan. Because you just, that's why you train so much, so that when you're, when it does happen, that kicks in and you respond, right? And again, like the military does it, law enforcement, which is not very liked right now, they do it. They train. And it's not always perfect, because, you know, again, sometimes you'll have people that you'll see how they're training, they had it, but it just didn't stick, and they respond a different way. But it's very, that's the purpose of it, is to train, to have that mental memory to respond in such a way when things happen. And here with persecution, look, I don't want to see persecution come in my lifetime with my children. I don't want to see it happen to my friends and families, their families and our church family. I want to be able to continue to go and evangelize people and live a peaceable life. But the reality is, as we look at society around us, it's not a crazy thing that we're talking about here. We look at society around us and we see what is happening. And we know what the Bible says, as was already mentioned, you live a godly life, you're going to face persecution. You stand for Christ, you're going to face persecution. They might not say that's why they're coming after you, but you're still going to face it.
I might have to get the name. It's been a while, but it was just a few weeks ago when the Black Lives Matter really thing started blowing up. It was a church in Chicago. This didn't hit the news. They're a Pentecostal church. I don't know everything that they believe. Just by listening to the guy preach, there's obviously some things I can listen to. He was just in the corner of Chicago preaching in front of his store. It was like a store that served food. It was well known, apparently, in that location. This guy decided to have a fire and start preaching the gospel. And he was saying some things that I probably wouldn't be so bold to say just because of my personality. I preach differently than he does. I'm not saying it was wrong, but he started really going after Black Lives Matter. Cops came. There was a riot. Okay. People were literally in the streets just yelling and screaming, wanting to kill these people. And I don't mean that like really, really murder them, but you know, their attitude exuded that kind of anger. Well, they got the attention of Facebook, and a lot of other people on Facebook got onto their live feed and had like 20,000 comments. It was ridiculous. And I followed this story for a little bit. It took a few days. Their store was shut down, graffitied, and destroyed. They canceled them. That's what they said. We're canceling this place. Cancel culture. That's where it kind of comes from. And they lost their livelihood. Do you think that can't happen to your church? You say something on a corner somewhere, somebody finds out where you gather, that's it. That guilty by association we started off with the show with is all it's going to take. And we need to be ready. And there's a couple of things you can do in scripture. You can stand boldly and take the hits, right? That's always good for the sake of the gospel. Hopefully you're not doing it foolishly. Mm-hmm. But you can stand your ground and face the music. You can also run. That is an option. Having money set aside to where if you have to leave the country or maybe leave the state, if possible, for whatever reason, being prepared to run with your family is always a possibility too, something to think about. That could also be part of your backup plan. That's more for individual believers than it is for the congregation, but once again, it's a backup plan. But whatever it is you do, like Mikey talked about and Natty kind of hinted at, and obviously Ricky, you've brought some really good points about thinking about others and some of the things that we have to start behaving like. Whatever it is, hopefully, Lord willing, in this show, we're doing exactly what we wanted to do. Start sparking some ideas. Start thinking about some things. Start having that discussion and have it actively. Don't just get together and brainstorm and nothing happens. Put something in place the day of. start practicing some small things first. And every congregation, every time you meet, start thinking of some other things. Look at observations. What did we do wrong this week? What happened last week? Did anything change? What can we do to improve our process? What can we do to secure our communication? What can we do to better serve our behaviors and our congregation, so that way we're not compromising our location or our communication or other people within the congregation, right? Have these discussions, have them frequently, have them once every 2 weeks if it gets too tiresome. In the beginning, have them every week until you finally start developing the habits, they become natural. Maybe some of your fellowship is going to take up the first 30 minutes talking about it. It's okay. We have church meetings sometimes where we talk about budgets and everybody's yawning their face off because some of it's boring, right? Although it's your money and you should be interested where it goes. You have church meetings in which you yawn. Replace that with 30 minutes of this is what we're going to do, church, and have only church members only, right? People that are actually dedicated to the church. And if you don't have a church membership, it's going to be very difficult for you to implement this plan in a very successful fashion.
All right, well, that was G220 Radio for tonight. I hope this does start the conversation. If you have any questions for us, any thoughts or other ideas that maybe you could bring to this conversation, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at g220radio@gmail.com. We would love to hear your feedback. Until next time, that's been G220 Radio. God bless and good night.